And welcome to Cody and Gold today. It is not Cody or Gold. They'll be in tomorrow. They're doing other stuff today. Fun stuff. Playing on the horizon. Kramer saying so. No Nick, the new guy. Doing some fun stuff. They'll be back tomorrow. What's up, Kramer Dog?
How's much, Bink? Are you doing okay over there?
We're doing fine.
Sure.
Doing fine. We got the media days going on. I got football in the mind. Like, we're a couple days away from being in Chiefs camp, actually Saturday.
So you'll be there.
I'll be there.
Be there live.
Dustman will be there with me. 9-1 Saturday right here on 610 Sports Radio. You hear the players, press conferences, interviews, Pete Sweeney, you name it, we'll drop by. But be in St. Joe for rookies and quarterbacks. And the rookies do matter this year. They do matter. Plus the debut of Kramer Sansone over on our sister station, BetQL.
That's true. Over at BetQL, 9 of 10.
And you'll be podcasting that for everybody, too.
Yes, sir. So if you missed that, which I'm hoping you're listening to that to Bink.
I'll listen to you, man. I'll go back and listen to you on podcast, bro.
Yeah, it's going to be a podcast.
You get your topics already lined up?
Nope.
You can start Royals or Chiefs. Obviously, you're probably going to start Chiefs. I hope you start Chiefs.
Well, I guess you'll just have to find out.
After all, you're doing Arrowhead Pride now. You're a big Arrowhead Pride guy.
That's very true. I'm a big Arrowhead Pride guy now. So, yeah, no, we'll probably – well, there's going to be, of course, the mix of some Chiefs and some Royals.
The Royals beat the Brewers yesterday, which is funny. You know, they were 18 – or the Royals 18 games under, the Brewers 17 games over. You know, the Royals 3-0 against the Brewers this year, 7-3 against the National League. Like, there's something about the National League for the Royals, something about the Brewers – I wonder if the Brewers feel kind of like the Royals did when the Orioles came in here and won 2 out of 3. How the Royals just seem to have the Brewers' number. There they are in first place. Here comes the Royals. Yet the Royals beat the Brewers. You love seeing it. And they needed this. They'd lost 12 road games in a row. The record for the Royals is 13 straight, but of course that's ended. That's in the past because they only get to 12 games. They had lost 18 of 22 games on the road. This team had not been good playing on the road when the Royals were doing that. But I will say this. Royals, Dave Holtzman put this out earlier from Bally Sports. Today, Vern takes over at noon. Obviously, Vern's on deck show. Royals and Brewers. Brad Keller on the mound today. Of course, you can hear Brad Keller. 9:35 each and every Tuesday with Fesco in the morning. But the Royals are looking for back-to-back road game wins for the first time since April. April! Yeah, it'll happen today, too. They'll sweep the Brewers. It's just what they do. Expect the unexpected, like Denny Matthews said. You have to. But that's not the important thing, Kramer. That is not the important thing. The important thing today, and it's not the fact that they have the third toughest schedule in all of baseball going forward. The Royals do. Third toughest by winning percentage, the Royals schedule the second half. But it's game 401 for Whit Merrifield. Yesterday, we celebrated game 400. Well, nobody celebrated it, really. I'm sure it meant something to Whit, playing him 400 straight games. Talked about it a little bit last night because it was 400 for Whit yesterday. I do think that's important. You got to look for the little things in life, Kramer. Alcides Escobar went 420. What did he end up? 421 before they ended the streak. He's got the Royals record, but it wasn't because of injury. It was because, they moved him to the outfield, moved him to third base, did anything they could to keep Alcides Escobar, who, by the way, got drilled by a pitch yesterday in the hand. I hope he's all right, but he never misses games. But Alcides Escobar's streak finally came to an end, not because he wanted to be out, because he had to be out. But Whit Merrifield, 400 straight games. I know Whit Merrifield joins Cody and Gold every Monday at 11 o'clock. It's 421 for Escobar. So Whit's at 401 today, providing he's in the lineup. Still haven't seen the lineups come out yet, but Whit Merrifield will be 421. That's impressive. I think Dansby Swanson's number two at 161 straight starts. But you don't see this in the era, Kramer, of guys getting hurt, not playing. This guy always wants to play. Remember, he was hit by a pitch or swung a foul ball and hit him in the leg, and he was sore in Oakland. Could have missed the game. Like, he could go to Mike Matheny the way this team is losing, say, "Hey, man, hey, Skip, I need a day off." But he doesn't do that. Like, he takes pride in what he does and showing up 400. This is long way from Cal Ripken. I get that. But it is the current longest streak in Major League Baseball. And you know he's zeroing in towards that Royals record.
And I think when he also hurt his like foot back when in Oakland, I remember him saying that he hasn't fouled a ball off his foot in like some time, and he actually fouled off 2 in 1 week on the same foot. So this is a guy that's going to battle through injury, and if there even is an injury, he's going to try to make sure he can stick it out through it because he's a gamer. That's what you want. That's what you appreciate about Witt. And at game 400, he's going to go up to 401 here right now. That's going to be it's awesome. That's something that you know that there's 162 games a season. What is that, like almost 3 seasons worth of games being out there? That's something that you want
to
appreciate.
2018.
That's something you want to appreciate from Witt. You need to appreciate that.
Oh, you do. And you take the small victories. Of course, right now we care about Ka'Warren Lynch coming back up to Kansas City. J.J. Piccolo was on with Cody and Gold, you know, talked about that. They're always on standby. They're on the 40-man. They could be here in Kansas City at any point. I do expect to see those guys up here. Bobby Witt Jr., maybe, hopefully. He had 2 hits yesterday in his first game in Omaha. Prado chimed in with the hit as well. Omaha lost to the St. Paul Saints yesterday. But Bobby Witt Jr., 2 hits after his promotion to Omaha. And we care about that stuff. But what we didn't want to see yesterday was Danny Duffy going on the IL. Brady Singer, listen, he had dead arm. I mean, it's what it is. 60 games last year. They knew it was going to happen at some point. It's kind of like that gas tank. You got it full, but eventually, if you don't fill it up, it's going to drop off at some point. That was Brady Singer yesterday. These young arms coming up. Mike Matheny joined Fesco in the morning just a little bit ago, about an hour ago, and he talked about the Danny Duffy injury and the bullpen as well.
The serious nature of it as far as how long it'll be, the medical team is doing. They're going all kinds of tests. I think he's even getting a second opinion. So we'll know a little bit more here soon, but unfortunately, you know, Danny's just been throwing the ball so well all season. It's one of those guys we were just, every time you put him on the mound, you were looking forward to seeing what he was going to be able to do. And, you know, you have a game like we had yesterday, it just reinforces how important our starting pitching is. And when we have a day where our starting pitchers are giving us a chance and go a little bit deeper into the game, eventually, our offense is going to get something done, and our bullpen has, for the most part, been very consistent to put things away. But those first innings are they set the tempo for the club.
Sometimes they say, Kramer, luck, if it's bad luck, if it wasn't for bad luck, you wouldn't have any luck at all. Like Duffy to me, like I was looking at the Mets, and I know there was interest from the Mets and Mets fans bringing in Duffy, maybe in the rotation, you put him in the bullpen. But it's a tradable piece. The trade deadline's coming up. It's basically the 30th. We're less than that. We're, 9 days away. What's the day? Is it day 20th or 21st?
21st.
Okay, so you're 9 days away from the trade deadline. They usually do it the 31st, but they're doing it the 30th this year. You know why? They're doing it on Friday night. Because hopefully guys get traded before the night games. Because the trade deadline is in the afternoon. There's 3 afternoon games that day. But they wanted it done because it's done at 3 o'clock, I think, on the 30th, the trade deadline. Because they didn't like those guys that would get pulled from the middle of a game. You know, with the rumors swirling. You know, fans in the stands looking at Twitter saying, hey, you've been traded. Hey, you've been traded. And the guy comes off. Remember Wilmer Flores crying 1 year with the Mets? Even though he didn't get moved, he thought he was getting moved and started bawling on the field. They don't want that. So they're doing it July 30th.
I kind of like that, though. I kind of like it. Like, oh, that guy's leaving the game. I wonder what happened with him. Oh, he's actually going to be on a bus heading to Pittsburgh, which would be terrible.
That was fun. You see him come in and high-fiving their teammates or whatever. But this is a, you know, potential trade piece for the Royals. You know, Soler didn't he hold up his end of the bargain. I know he ended that 32 straight inning streak the Royals had without a home run. I don't know if you know that. It was another streak broken yesterday.
Yeah, another streaks were broken.
They went in 29 innings, got it to 32 before Soler went deep. Keep this in mind. They did not homer at all against the Orioles. And the Orioles have given up the most home runs in the American League. Didn't homer, but finally, Soler hit one. Broern got one too. Oh, and by the way, Kramer, our guy Jimmy Govert, the governor, has been promoted to Northwest Arkansas. Don't know if you saw that or not, but
yes, sir.
Talking about promotions.
The governor
is coming. You saw him in Quad Cities, by the way, I do believe.
Yes, sir.
But Mike Matheny also about bringing in or calling up. Bob's been a big advocate. Let these guys, you know, with this season being a lost season, see what they got. I mean, try to salvage something out of the second half of the season. And that's why I think Ka'Warren Lynch, they got their taste once, but of course you got to be careful. It's got to be right because you don't want them coming up and failing twice. Because that's when people start to wonder about you in the future. Like, it's one thing. Like, Mike Trout was once sent down, but once he got back up, he was ready to roll, right? Alex Gordon got sent down, came back up, was ready to roll. Look, you got to be careful with top prospects, you know, kind of managing them. Make sure it is the right time. That's my only fear. Like, they come back up here and they don't have the success. Coors had more success in Omaha than Lynch at this point. Lynch is the 21st best prospect in the MLB top 100. I think Coors, the most recent one, is sitting at like 92. Mike Matheny on bringing in or calling up players.
What we're talking about here are decisions that are made organizationally, and you know, we are always in the middle of those conversations. But understand, there's it's more in depth, and there's a lot of different things to consider when the right time to bring a young player up is. And for us, we're still going out and just competing to win games every single day. And I'm always really careful, especially with our players, because they wanted to have those conversations as well. And it's a dangerous spot to go to, especially when you start talking around the trade deadline of, hey, we need this or we need that, or why don't we do this? And just encourage guys not to play junior GM. Let's just do our job, and our job is to go out and get better and win baseball games, figure out each day how to play the kind of baseball that we know our fan base loves to watch. And when we do get any kind of help, whether it's a young player or whether it's an acquisition, we'll make the most of it. But, you know, it's kind of dangerous in here to go down that road. So say, you know, I've been on teams that were just right there at that deadline, and you're always getting these kind of questions. Okay, if we just could get this. So what you're basically saying inside the clubhouse, and you're telling guys in there wearing the same uniform as you, that you are not good enough to help us, we don't want you here. And then that causes some serious friction. And what we do is we just focus on what we have, where we are. Let's go play. Let's figure out how to improve.
Corin Lynch was on my checklist. I've went over the checklist before, Kramer. And we'll switch to the Chiefs here in a minute. And guess what? This town's ready to switch to Kansas City Chiefs. Read Mahomes talk on Friday. Like, Mahomes shows up. It's quarterbacks and rookies. Mahomes get ready for St. Joe. Like, that part's coming. The American Century Classic, all that in the past, it's about Super Bowl time for the Kansas City Chiefs. And a lot of people's attention does shift to the Kansas City Chiefs. The only time I've seen where the Royals have kind of dominated the conversation, obviously, during training camp was 14 to 15. A little bit to some extent, 2013. Because I remember doing shows up at Uncle D's, right? You basically talk all Chiefs. And then, of course, you'd sprinkle in some Royals. And, of course, 2015. Pretty much spent most of the time talking about the Kansas City Royals, but obviously that conversation is going to be shifted. But I don't know if you did a checklist before the season started, Kramer, 2021, things you wanted to see the Royals accomplish. Like, one of them for me is the guy starting today was Brad Keller. Like, he's the ace of the staff. Can you see him, you know, get better? He's got a birthday coming up here on the 27th, I believe. Same birthday, same year as Adalberto Mondesi. They're born the exact same day, which is crazy to me. But regardless, Keller had a good 7 2/3 against Cleveland his last time out. Like, see him progress. We still don't know. That's still incomplete because he did have those early inning woes with the Royals this year. Seeing him, again, July and August, do something. September, numbers are inflated. I get that. But last year was different because they expanded playoffs, and that was only the second month of baseball. That was there. Lynch and Coar were on there, too, because those were going to be the guys up here first. Like, Daniel Lynch, college pitcher. Jackson Coar, college pitcher. They were the next here. Bubich, we got to see. Singer, we got to see. They're on the checklist, too. But Lynch and Coar were, I think we're going to get to see those guys back in Kansas City. It's unfortunate what happened to them. But you know what? This season's like 2010, 11, 12. It's training wheels, man. You come up here, you can fail. It's not the end of the world. Like, 14 and 15, you couldn't get called up and fail for the Royals. Like, the expectations were different for those teams.
And now I feel like at this point, might as well just bring him up. At this point in the season for the Royals, after the trade deadline's over, there's no reason for you not to bring him up, just to put him on the roster so they can just, you know, work it out on the big league level rather than just doing it in AAA. Because we already know the talent gap between AAA and Major League Baseball is, like, say it's the same amount of miles from here
size
to St. Louis. So it's like, it's just huge. So just why not just bring them up? I mean, we already saw they came out there. We already saw what they have done. Granted, they probably have already worked on it for the couple months they've been back in AAA. So why just bring them up? There's no reason for you not to, and just put them back on that checklist of saying, hey, they at least made it to the majors in this season, in 2021. So just bring them up.
This season was an unusual season when it started. It was a blend of youth and veteran leadership. You know, you bring in Santana. You hope Benintendi can turn things around. But again, Benintendi, guy with the World Series ring. I mean, that's what they had. They brought in Dyson to kind of impart his wisdom. Kyle Isbell even talked about it early on, how Dyson's giving him all this advice. And I guarantee you, Davis and Holland have shared with the relievers. To be honest with you, I think Davis especially was here because of what he's done than what he's going to do. I think that was kind of an experiment. What kind of wisdom could he impart from things he's learned in Major League Baseball? So with the young guys coming up, I think that was key to have those guys here. Now, the performance, we can argue that on a different level, but I think that was the original plan. But there's still time. There's still time to salvage things. Let them learn here. Let them fail here because this season is a lost season. You might as well do that. You might as well have something where you know these players. Like, it's tough when you don't know what they're going to be. Like, this year, they were the unknown. And to me, they're still the unknown. They're the unknown at the major league level. Like, who knew Daniel Lynch was going to be tipping his pitches? But major league teams know. And it was a learning experience. And he found out, guess what? You can't do different things on different pitches because big league guys know. They watch. They learn. What do you think Johnny Gomes was here with the Royals? He was like the master of any little thing. He was like a coach on the field. Like, he was great at picking up the little things, and he would help Christian Clone out and other guys because he was the master. He's been it, been there, seen it, done it. Like, he was brought in here, I think, a little bit for the wisdom purposes.
And who knows, maybe for Daniel Lynch or for Jackson Coar, maybe the starting rotation isn't the thing for them. I mean, we saw with Luke Hochaver for the Royals early on, they had him as the starting pitcher. Then once they moved him back into, once they moved him into the bullpen, he became a different player, and he actually became more subtle and more dominant, and he actually found his own craft. I'm not saying it's way too early to say, hey, move Coar Lynch into the bullpen, but if that's what gets them onto the big league roster and helps them dominate or even find their groove, just do that too. You don't have to put them in the rotation. Just get them up here and have them learn.
And especially with Bobby Witt Jr. Now, you can compare him to Jared Kelenic, who still has the lowest average in baseball. Remember, he was called up, hit a couple bombs for Seattle, the fourth best prospect. Mariners fans, the Mariners are one of six teams in Major League Baseball that have never won a championship. And they had high hopes on Kelenic, right? Bring him up, they said. Bring him up. He's AAA. They brought him up. Did okay. Then he goes on for an 0-for-39 stretch. Back to the minor leagues. He was in the futures game.
He actually tore it back up again in minors.
Yes, he's tearing it back up. But Wander Franco hasn't exactly torn the cover off anything at this point. That's their one prospect in baseball. Like Bobby Witt Jr., could he come up here and struggle? Yeah, but you'd rather learn it now during this season because there's no expectations. I liken it all the time to Pittsburgh Steelers or the Patriots. Like, they were different when they drafted you because you were expected to perform when you were drafted. Like, if you were going and you were a rookie and you were going to be getting some playing time for the Patriots, it wasn't, hey, this is a learning experience. You learn. No, you got to play. And you got to play at a high level or you're not going to play. That was the expectation. The Chiefs are like that now, too. Like, if you're a young guy playing for the Chiefs, there's expectations. You're the Super Bowl favorite.
And see, that's what the difference is between with NFL, with them not having that minor league system for them. That's because you need to have those guys come in and be ready for day one if they're at a higher draft pick. And it's kind of like how Bobby Witt Jr. was a high draft pick for the Royals. That's what the thing's different about with baseball. You need to grind. You need to actually grow. Is Bobby Witt Jr. ready for Major League Baseball? He might be. Do I want him up here right now? No, because I'd rather have him flourish and also get his craft well-known since he just went from Double-A to Triple-A. There's no reason for him to come up from Triple-A to the majors within a few weeks. Granted, I know everybody wants him up here, but service time too. Do you want to keep him for an extra long and then have more years on with him, or do you just want to call him up now?
Are you buying the fact, because listen, Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado are good friends now, right? They're roommates.
Yeah.
They go to the futures game together. They go up to Omaha. Nick Prado was a name that was drafted 14th overall by the Royals in 14. A lot of people forgot about him. Early on, they watched him. 2018 in Lexington. Him and MJ Melendez tore it up. Lexington won the South Atlantic League. Used to be the Royals low A. Not anymore. They're not even affiliated right now, Lexington. So they won in 18. They get promoted to Wilmington. Both of them hit under 200. But you know what? Wilmington still won the Carolina League. Like, they won at both levels. They won it there, And then they went 1-1 in high A. Kind of reminds you of Hosmer and Moose, right? Winning the Texas League at Northwest Arkansas, winning the PCL in Omaha. Hosmer was the number 3 overall pick in baseball. Moose was the number 2, different years by a year. But still, they went up together and they became that tandem. And people are looking at Prado. Like, what do you think, Kramer? I mean, everybody was talking a lot of Bobby Witt Jr. But then Daniel Lynch became the hot name. People started talking about him, you know, hitting 100 from the left side, Triple A. Like, Daniel Lynch became the hot name. Him and Bobby Witt Jr. Nick Prado was an afterthought. Nick Prado figured out his swing at the alternate site, right? And he's really emerged here in Double A. And now he's in the MLB top 100 now. He's 99. But Prado fell off for a while. And now he's back. But they lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles. Both Prado and Witt Jr. get called up. They go to the Futures game together. Mike Matheny was asked about the development of Witt Jr. in Prado. Here was his thoughts.
You got to realize everything that I say has potential of getting in the way of their development and of their progression. And so what we're going to do is continue to cheer them on no matter where they are, whether it's at a Futures game or whether it's in Double A or whether it is in Omaha, and realize that the challenges that they're starting to have and the things that they've been already overcoming. You watch Bobby had a little bit of a slow start. He needed to have that at the professional level and to see how he can overcome.
Welcome back to Cody and Gold. Josh Vernier takes over. Vern's on deck show. Royals and Brewers for the fourth time this year. See if it's a nice clean sweep over a team that's first place, the Milwaukee Brewers. Jay Binkley with Kramer Sansone. Cody and Gold doing something fun. They'll be back in tomorrow. By the way, text line. I keep seeing this. Well, we have a losing season. Well, of course you do. You're in a small market. You're going to have the ups and the downs. But you went to the pinnacle. You went to the top of the mountain. But you keep wanting different general managers, but yet nobody's got a suggestion. You ask people, name me 3 other people you'd like. You never hear another peep, Kramer. You never hear another peep. You know why? Because they don't know 3 other names that could be a GM. Because you know what? If it was a good GM, they would be GM in Major League Baseball at this point. And I'll tell you this much. Dayton Moore would be picked up like that for another team. 100%.
I mean, we've done the virtual Royals. We weren't too bad doing that one.
No, we put a team together.
You want to go in cahoots?
We created Patrick Mahomes.
That's true. Oh, we didn't create him. He signed a deal with becoming a part owner with the Royals.
Which is hilarious because his jersey became the top-selling jersey. We even said it. Like he can't use Witt's number, though. We got to go 99.
That's true.
But regardless, give me another name. You can't. Dayton Moore have a job within a second if he ever went anywhere. And he's got a plan for this team. Regardless, the Kansas City Chiefs in training camp starting Friday. You hear from Reed and Mahomes. It is the kickoff of the NFL. We have teams that have already started right now. We've got 30 teams are practicing against somebody else, a different team. The Chiefs are not one of those teams. But back in 2000, Kramer, 10 of 31 teams, 32%, called home training camp. Meaning the rest of them, because there was 31 teams at that point. The Texans joined in 2002, making it 32. But only 10 teams had their training camps at home. That's it. 10. You go to 2018, 21 of the 32 teams had home training camps. Meaning 11 went somewhere else. Then in 2019, 69% of pro football teams had training camp at their home facilities. Only 10 teams went away. 2020, a little bit different. COVID, everybody had to have them at home. So all 32 at their home facility. This year, Kramer, 27 of the 32 NFL teams, 84% are at home. The teams that aren't, the Chiefs, the Colts, the Panthers, the Cowboys, the Washington football team that can't get even that trademark. I didn't know if you knew that. They can't even get WFT trademark. But regardless, they're spending 5 days away, then they're coming back. But Andy Reid did this in Philadelphia. He left. They went straight back to Philadelphia. I like training camps away. St. Joe it is. The Chiefs are one of the small handfuls of teams. I hope St. Joe enjoys it. Hope Missouri Western enjoys it. Chiefs, great indoor practice facility, great practice, great stuff up there. But that's not the normal. The Chiefs are outside the normal to have training camp away.
And I honestly feel like it's a good thing, a beneficial thing for the players to go somewhere else to start off. I would say to start off the kickoff the regular the season pretty much until they get back to regular season, because you want to see that, I guess, the scenery change. Because you're going to be at that facility over Arrowhead so many times throughout the season. You already know that. They're going to be over there, that little practice facility. But might as well go up to St. Joe, different scenery, and it might rejuvenate or be like, okay, it's time to go. It's go time. We're going to get in here, practice hard for these preseason games, and we can get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. The camaraderie. I had Mark Ross from NFL Network on a couple nights ago, Kramer. He was in the front office with Andy Reid in Philadelphia. He was youngest guy in the front office for a while, but he's a personnel guy. He got two championships in New York. He works for NFL Network now. He won two of them with the Giants. And they had somebody study training camps away or at home. And the winning percentage is basically the same. The teams that went away, same winning percentage. Because I asked him too. I said, does it do anything for camaraderie? But why are teams staying home for camp? I got a little worried last year because teams get comfortable. Coaches have their offices. They don't have to move anything. Everything stays the same. The facilities are obviously better than what they are at training camp. You got to bring a lot of stuff with you when you go away. But I asked Mark Ross, why are teams staying at home?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. So I've done this with both with the Eagles, Bills, and with the Giants, where have had home and away. And it was a byproduct of, number one, the old facilities that teams used to have. You couldn't really have training camp there, especially with the expansion of fans being there, the fan experience and all the games and everything that goes on with it. So you couldn't have that there. That's why teams had to go away and kind of take over college campuses where they had to have enough space to do it. But now with all these teams building these immaculate, gorgeous, huge practice facilities with much, much more space, they were able to do it and house the training camp there. So that was a combination of things. And if you ask staff, they like not having to move the IT guys. Don't have to just get the computers and change the video guys. Don't have to switch everything. If you can just stay at your own place and be comfortable and do it, I think most people with teams would rather do that. But also last year, I think teams learned, okay, we have a new way of doing things. And I think you'll see this more with meetings and such, that we don't have to have scouts flying all over, coaches doing all this. We can do much more things efficiently and effectively and not spend a lot of money traveling to do things in-house more so than outsource things.
Now, the Cowboys go all the way to California, obviously much different. Chiefs, it's easy. If they need to do some kind of medical procedure, whatever, they can just come back to Kansas City. It's not far from St. Joe to Kansas City. I like it. I'm glad the Chiefs do this. But let's be honest, Kramer, it's becoming a dinosaur to go away from training camp. Personally, I love training camps when they're not at the facility. I love the training camp experience. I'm probably weird in that. I don't, you know, whatever you want to say. I'm a binocular guy. You know, I am. I've had two pairs of Bushnells since they've been in St. Joe. Because I lost one pair. I have no idea where it is. Had to go buy another pair. I like binoculars. I like training camp. I like it. You're from St. Joe. I mean, you understand the importance of the Kansas City Chiefs coming to St. Joe. And you live up here now, but you're born and bred in St. Joe.
It brings a lot of revenue. It brings, a lot more people come to St. Joe now. And it's to watch the Chiefs. There's no reason for them not to come up there to watch them practice. And then, obviously, go get some food around the area. It's good for St. Joe, for the small town, I would say. I mean, St. Joe's relatively small compared to here, but it's good. It's a bright spot.
You know, the camaraderie, building those relationships with your teammates, maybe you see it's overblown. Mark Ross thought it might have been a little bit overblown because he, you know, threw out some stats out there of teams that that do go away and stay home and relatively same winning percentage. I had a feeling this was going to happen after 2020, Kramer. I had a feeling this would happen after all teams were forced to stay home last year. Not only that, they can control how many people watch your practices. Like, the Chiefs are unusual. They have 16 open practices. This is not the norm in the NFL. A lot of teams, 12, 10, 4. Hell, the Texans have 5 open-the-season ticket holders only. Some teams will invite fans to their stadium, and they'll have, like, a night practice. The Chiefs used to do that a long time ago, at St. Joe. They'd have a night practice where they'd have family fun day at night. Obviously, Andy Reid, very smart about when he does it in the morning because it's going to be hotter than hell starting like today and tomorrow and for the foreseeable future in training camp. Smart to do it in the morning. Even family fun day, get your butt up and go early if you want to watch training camp. I felt last year fans in this town were robbed to celebrate because that would have been insane last year in St. Joe. Coming off the Super Bowl, because fans didn't get it, man. It was weird because we didn't get OTAs, we didn't get minicamp, we didn't get preseason football. Boom, you're thrown into the Texans right away. You know what I'm saying? It felt weird last year. Last year, it seemed like the Super Bowl parade, then the world was shut down. Boom, we got football back. Thankfully. This year, you get the whole thing. You get the whole charade. You got OTAs, you got minicamp, you're going to have training camp, you got preseason football, even though it's three games instead of four, which is fine with me. But training camp, everything is, I mean, football was different last year. I'm glad the Chiefs went ahead and got that ring. That's nice. But they weren't able to have the fun at training camp like I think this year will provide.
It's going to be special and different because since we didn't have it last year. That's the thing. We didn't have it last year, and now it's just going to be a fun. I mean, you can just say it's a show because it's going to be a show because of all the talent you're going to see out there performing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It will start at Saturday. Get coverage up there Saturday and Sunday. Whenever the Chiefs are up there, we're going to be up there. Cody and Gold will be doing their shows from St. Joe. There's a tent up there. They'll be at practice, right there, right in front of them. It's usually the offensive line that's like right in front of them, like Tooney versus Reed one-on-ones. You get to see the offensive line. Kramer, you're an Arrowhead Pride guy now because you're working with them. They put out a poll the other day. What position group, if I told you you could watch one in St. Joe, what would it be? And they had like offensive line, receivers, corners, linebackers. They put a poll out there. Offensive line, one in a landslide. That's where I voted because that's what I'd be looking at. I don't know about you, but that's where I'd go.
I'm looking at offensive line to first start off because, I mean, it's the big question mark from what we saw at the end of the Super Bowl. And we watched what they did this offseason in order to, I guess, bolster it up. And you got to protect the moneymaker, Patrick Mahomes, because, I mean, keep him upright for a long period of time. He's going to have so much more time to figure out what he wants to do. And giving Mahomes a half a second more time, a couple seconds more time, that's going to go a long way. It will.
No, it will. Here's the thing with this offensive line is – no, Orlando Brown's got his job. Tooney's got his job. Now, where it gets interesting is the right side. Actually, from the center on, you have Austin Blythe that they brought in, the veteran guy who was third in the NFL in center snaps last year, who was a right guard and a draft pick and a veteran player. He took over Brian Allen with the Rams. He's versatile. He can play guard or center. He's done both in the National Football League. That goes a long way with Andy Reid once you've played in this league. Like, he likes that. But I think it's a foregone conclusion. Everybody, you know, assumes it's going to be Creed Humphrey. I mean, that's what you'd kind of wish for. Creed Humphrey was an absolute stud at Oklahoma. Didn't give up a sack when he was there. The funny thing is, like, Tooney, Orlando Brown, and even Trey Smith, you're talking about from Tennessee, the draft pick, you're talking about guys that didn't give up sacks. They did a few, but not many, and penalties. They were not penalized guys, which is huge. So let's say Creed Humphrey wins the job, which that's a battery. Like Aaron Rodgers, even though he's like in wherever he's at right now, I think he ends up in Green Bay. But Corey Lindsey, the center, is down with the Chargers. Like, he lost him. I think it's important that center quarterback, and keep in mind Mahomes, you know, he dealt with Kilgore for a little bit last year. Austin Ryder was the starter. By the way, still doesn't have a job, and he was a top 50 free agent on NFL.com. Austin Ryder, still not a job. His second start in the NFL came with Patrick Mahomes. Like, Patrick Mahomes has dealt with kind of inexperience at center. So it's not a problem. And Creed Humphrey, I don't know if you know this or not, Kramer, but he's ambidextrous. He can snap with either hand. He prefers left hand, but he can literally snap. That can really screw up teams, I think. But he's going to have to settle with the one or the other for Patrick. But the bottom line is, let's say he wins the job. All right, that's a rookie. Does that concern you at all? I mean, Reed is not going to start him unless he can fulfill the job. Right guard becomes interesting. I think Kyle Long would have had a leg up. He's hurt. Then you got Nick Allegretti, started the Super Bowl. What do you do with Nick? Andrew Wiley, same thing. He's in the mix. LDT opted out last year to do medical stuff in Canada. He's back. Super Bowl starter. Like, Kyle Long, I think, makes this team because he's flexible, can play guard, tackle, wherever you want him to play. And I feel the same way with Austin Blythe because he can step in at center if there's an injury. He could play right guard. And I'm not putting it out of the equation Austin Blythe wins right guard if he doesn't win center. Like, I'm not putting that out of the equation. In right tackle, obviously, Rimmer's with the experience. He's better on the right side. They had to start him on the left side in the Super Bowl. He's back. But then he's going to be battling Lucas Niang, opt out from last year. And the opt-outs haven't had a lot of luck in the NFL. They haven't had a lot of luck. But he's a little bit different. I think he would have been put on the pup list anyway last year. That's why he went in the third round. Hurt his labrum at TCU. Different deal. I think he would have been injured last year anyway. He stayed in contact with the Chiefs. He's going to be battling Rimmers. But to me, if you all of a sudden you said Creed Humphrey's your center, Trey Smith, the sixth-round pick, who's more than capable to be a starting guard in the NFL, in my opinion, he's the long-term fixture for the Kansas City Chiefs, Trey Smith. And then if you had Lucas Niang win the job, that'd be three rookies. Now, that's obviously not going to happen. Honestly, they probably have one rookie starting on the offensive line. Maximum two. But I think by week five, you for sure have two.
So do you think Austin Blythe wins the center position?
I don't. I think Creed actually wins the job, but it's going to be a battle between them. Obviously, Mahomes needs to feel comfortable. Austin Blythe is a starter in the National Football League at the center position. Creed Humphrey, though, look at the quarterbacks he was with at Oklahoma. These are NFL guys. He didn't give up sacks. He's got a nasty disposition. Again, this line flipped from technician to nasty. Tooney's more technician. I give him that. But the rest of this offensive line's got an attitude.
And personally for me, I think Humphrey, if he can win the starting gig for the long-term role, I mean, he's going to be here. He's under control for 4 years. So why don't just have him and Pat just get that.
That's the battery you'd want for the future, for sure.
That's true. Yeah, but because, I mean, Blythe with that short contract, you don't know if he's going to be here the years after that.
So I think Creed Humphrey can win the job. Like, I'm curious to see what Niang's all about. Like, the Chiefs were actually, he put out some videos where he's working on the left side for a while at tackle. Because that's when the Chiefs were stuck. Because you know as well as I did, we did the draft show. Left tackle starting on day one was tough in this draft. This draft was a hell of a, matter of fact, you got to pick 21. It became, well, he opted out. Well, it's uncertain. There was a lot of uncertainty in this draft. And the Chiefs were stuck without a tackle. And then the Ravens, come on down. Help out a rival. I still can't believe that Orlando Brown is here.
I still don't understand why they traded him to the Chiefs.
And all the one piece they meant. The one piece they needed. The one piece they needed. Listen, I still come to it. Trey Smith's my favorite pick because he slid four rounds, essentially. Yes. People are worried about the blood clots. Well, obviously, he wasn't worried about it. You know why? He could have opted out last year with medical. He didn't. And he was dominant. Did you see Trey Smith with Jeff Schwartz?
Yes.
The Big Boy Football Club. It's like a quarterback camp that Gruden used to do with linemen.
How did you get that attitude of, like, wanting to physically punish people? Because we're going to watch your film, and you physically punish people on the field. How do you turn that on as an NFL player?
Yeah, I bring it back to high school, man. My high school coach had to sit me down. He's like, dude, you're too big, you're too strong, too athletic. Like, you're playing way too soft. When I flipped the switch, I mean, it was too fun to ever turn it off. I mean, I get on the field. I mean, it's strictly business. I'm not trying to play around with anybody.
Strictly I love this kid's attitude, man. Like, you see him drawing plays and stuff with Schwartz? I mean, Schwartz was impressed by it. Trey Smith will be a coach in this league at some point, trust me. But he's going to have a hell of a career till then. I remember when Jeff Schwartz asked him about taking somebody's will when you pancake him. Again, Kramer, the more I'll be watching a lot of Trey Smith, man. I'm really intrigued by him. I like the attitude. I like the disposition. You know what reminds me of? Coleccio Simile. That attitude. Loved it. That was a big loss for the Chiefs last year. He brought attitude. I think there was a lot of technician sound guys on the offensive line. The nastiness was a different subject. This year, Orlando Brown wants to punish you. Trey Smith wants to punish you. Creed Humphrey wants to punish you. Yeah, Tooney does, but he's a technician guy. You need guys like that. But they needed a touch of nasty. They needed to make teams sweat it out the night before. Hey, man, I got to face this guy. This guy's coming out to kick my ass. Like, that's the feeling. I mean, listen to this. If you don't get fired up, I don't know what to tell you.
That's why I play the game. I love pissing them off, man.
Like that look in their eyes when they get up. Yeah. It's like there's nothing like it. I wish we had a camera. We need to get the camera the next time when you film a game and just look at the defender's eyes and you knock them down. And they just look. I remember 2009 we were playing the Giants. And we won 41-9, and we had like 300 yards rushing. And the look of like on their face, I'll never forget it. The defensive linemen were just distraught.
Yeah.
Like it's the greatest feeling of all time, because this position's hard, right? Like it's not a fun position. What is the best part of playing offensive line?
I would say the physicality, man. When you just physically impose your will on somebody to the point where they get up, and you like you said, you look in their eyes and they're defeated, man. You're just like, man, we can keep running this play all night, coach. That is the best feeling that I've had playing the game is when you just take somebody's will.
I'm not counting this guy out, man. Taking their will. Like, that is refreshing to hear. And the guy's like one of those nicest guys you'll ever see. But he knows that switch. He's got that next level. Again, the attitude adjustment with this offensive line is going to be fun to watch. Not only do you feel really comfortable in them protecting Patrick Mahomes, because they've protected quarterbacks wherever they've been. Creed Humphrey was known for not giving up sacks. Trey Smith, the same way. And Orlando Brown, the same way. This team's got a touch of nasty about him, Kramer. Listen, off the field, nice guys. I get, you know, it has nothing to do with that. But when they play football, they want to punish you. And you hear Trey Smith with Jeff Schwartz, that kind of attitude you got to like. That kind of disposition. I think it's the biggest difference. You follow the Raiders and you see what they're doing. I mean, again, we can look at the Raiders. We can look at the Steelers. Like, Steelers lose DeCastro. He might retire now. He's already done with them. Villanueva's gone. Pouncey's gone. Like, Pittsburgh might be bringing in Melvin Ingram. Who's going to block for Ben? You look at the Raiders. Gabe Jackson in Seattle. Rodney Hudson's now with the Cardinals. Trent Brown went to the Patriots. I mean, we're seeing these lines. We're going to see who's good and who's bad. And it comes down to the offensive line. Who are the best teams in the AFC? I think, well, first of all, the Chiefs are. But the second bubble, I'm putting the Colts and the Browns because both of them have outstanding offensive lines. It's the teams with lines. Lines get little respect, but if you want your quarterback to perform and stand upright, you got to have them.
It's the battles in the trenches. You got to have the big boys down there making sure they can protect the little brother behind them.
I mean, nobody likes to talk, and you don't want to hear linemen's names during broadcast because it usually means they had a penalty. Oh, it's coming back because of a holding. No, you don't want that. I mean, maybe if they make a nice pancake and you hear their name, that's cool. But you don't want to hear the offensive line's name. Like, Eric Fisher used to be the biggest topic of conversation here. Then it became a known. Then no one talked about him. Hopefully, you don't hear the lineman's name. You know who they are. They make it known who they are, but you don't want to hear their name. And I like the Chiefs have had a penalty problem last couple of years. Get guys, let the offense do their damage. Don't hinder them. Block for Patrick Mahomes. Be nasty. If they can be nasty, think what Mahomes can do behind him. Think about what Clyde Edwards-Helaire can do at the running back position. I think the biggest difference between the Chiefs' offense, when people say, how can the Chiefs' offense get better? It's that line, man. That line will make this offense better. I don't think there's any question about it. But people always wonder, you know, is Clyde going to have a different role? Like, how are they going to take this offense to another level? That's the next level. The next level is being able to do what you want to do and be able to call whatever play you want to call because you know that you can trust the offensive line. You're not calling things because you're worried about a pass rusher on the other side and, yeah, I can't roll Mahomes out this way because he's going to get hit. Like, you don't have to worry about those things. You can kind of call anything you want to because you trust your offensive line. And not only that, let's be honest, that right tackle needs to be on par with the left tackle. Left tackle has always been considered the key position in football, but you know where elite pass rushers lining up? A lot of times they're lining up against the right tackle nowadays. That's the way the NFL shifted. And they're working the inside, but the right tackle sees elite pass rushers in the NFL. That's why he's got to step up.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
Well, I'm just saying right tackle is becoming more and more important because it's not okay. Best pass rushers are going to be on the left side. No, that's the way defenses work. They look for mismatches. They look for ways to screw with you. And that's exactly what they do. Coming up next, though, J.J. Piccolo has we'll come back to Kansas City Royals for a minute. Josh Fournier takes over at noon for Royals and Brewers on Vern's On Deck show. But J.J. Piccolo had some interesting things to say about Bobby Witt Jr., about Nick Prado, and could we see Kawarren Lynch? We'll do that next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.